And it's like, that keeps us humble.
City Council will reconvene. Carla, please call the roll.
Adams.
Here.
Fish.
Here.
Leonard.
Here.
Saltzman.
Here.
Potter.
Here.
Please read the 2:30 time certain.
Item 1446, appeal of Eastmoreland Neighborhood Association against the hearing officer's decision to approve with conditions the application of Reed Institute for a conditional use master plan amendment for Reed College at 3203 Southeast Woodstock, LU08114298CUMS.
The City Attorney's Office will describe the hearings process.
This is an on-the-record hearing. This means you must limit your testimony to material and issues in the record. During this hearing, you may only talk about the issues, testimony, exhibits, and other evidence that were presented at the earlier hearing before the hearings officer. You cannot bring up anything new. This hearing is designed only to decide if the hearings officer made the correct decision based on the evidence that was presented to him. If you start to talk about new issues or try to present new evidence today, you may be interrupted and reminded that you must limit your testimony to the record. We will begin with a staff report by the Bureau of Development Services staff for approximately 10 minutes. Following the staff report, the City Council will hear from interested persons in the following order. The appellant will go first and will have 10 minutes to present their case. Following the appellant, persons who support the appeal will go next. Each person will have 3 minutes to speak to the council. Is it going to be 3 minutes or two?
I'm going to have to find out how many folks have signed it to testify, Carla. That will determine whether it's 3 minutes or two.
This three-minute time limit applies regardless of whether you are speaking for yourself or on behalf of an organization such as a business association or a neighborhood association. The principal opponent will have 15 minutes to address the City Council and rebut the appellant's presentation. After the principal opponent, the council will hear from persons who oppose the appeal. If there is no principal opponent, the council will move directly to testimony from persons who oppose the appeal after supporters of the appeal conclude their testimony. Again, each person will have 3 minutes each, whether you are speaking for yourself or on behalf of an organization. Finally, the appellant will have 5 minutes to rebut the presentation of the opponents of the appeal. The council may then close the hearing, deliberate, and take a vote on the appeal. If the vote is a tentative vote, the council will set a future date for the adoption of findings and a final vote on the appeal. If the council takes a final vote today, that will conclude the matter before the council. I would like to announce several guidelines for those who will be addressing City Council today. First, this evidentiary record is closed. Again, this is an on-the-record hearing. This means you must limit your remarks to arguments based on the record compiled by the hearings officer. You may refer to evidence that was previously submitted to the hearings officer. You may not submit new evidence today. If your argument includes new evidence or issues, the council will not consider it, and it will be rejected in the City Council's final decision. If you believe a person who addressed City Council today improperly presented new evidence or presented a legal argument that relies on evidence that is not in the record, you may object to that argument. Finally, under state law, only issues that were raised before the hearings officer may be raised in this appeal to City Council. If you believe another person has raised issues today that were not raised before in front of the hearings officer, you may object to the council's consideration of that issue.
Thank you. Do any members of the council wish to declare a conflict of interest? No council members have a conflict of interest to declare. Do any members of the council have any ex parte contacts to declare or information gathered outside of the hearing to disclose?
I have an ex parte contact. I think probably over a year ago I met with Reed College's president. I think it was our first meeting. And this was certainly something that came up in more or less in passing.
I've met with the Neighborhood Association where this issue was discussed, among other issues of concern to the neighborhood, Eastmoreland neighborhood. I've met with Reed College president and staff who, as part of issues relating to Reed College and its relationship with the city, and walking door to door in the neighborhood as a candidate at a number of residents in the area expressed their opinion to me.
And I, too, have met with the president of Reed College in the same period that Commissioner Saltzman did, and also one of the advocates in the neighborhood.
Do any members of council have questions or other preliminary matters that need to be addressed before we begin the hearing? How many people are signed up to testify?
We have six people on each side, six who oppose and six who support the appeal.
Okay. We'll limit the time at 3 minutes per person. Staff, please come forward. You have 10 minutes and state your name for the record.
Good afternoon, Council. I'm Sylvia Cape, the assigned planner for this review. Before I get started, I'd like to remind Council that the 120-day clock has been extended by the applicant until next Wednesday, October 29th. In addition, besides myself, my colleague Bob Haley, representing Portland Transportation, is here today as well to answer any questions Council might have regarding transportation issues. Reed College proposes to amend their current master plan with major amendments, which include an expansion of the master plan boundary, a list of potential development projects that may occur over the next 10 years. Yikes. Thank you. And identified potential building sites on the campus. Amendments also include revising the maximum student enrollment cap and the reconfiguration of parking on campus to relieve pressure on the east parking lot, which at times gets full and results in spillover parking into the neighborhood. However, the most significant request by Reed College is a proposal to change the use of the Parker House from residential to a college-related institutional use. This change requires a conditional use approval. The Parker House is proposed to be used for college-related meetings, formal breakfast, luncheon, and dinner meetings, small to medium college-related social gatherings, and occasional larger events. The college has also proposed to make the facility available to neighborhood community organizations for meetings as a community service. This proposal is the most significant element included in the college's proposed update of the master plan. The proposal for the Parker House has generated both support and opposition by neighbors of Reed College. At the hearing, the college submitted additional materials that included clarifications and revisions to the original proposal for the Parker House, most importantly, a reduction in the number, frequency, and scale of the events. The hearings officer approved the master plan amendments and specifically approved the conditional use request for the Parker House based on a significantly reduced schedule of events, activities, and number of guests. Hearings officer imposed 17 conditions of approval governing the operations of the Parker House, which includes a condition that requires the college to construct frontage improvements along Southeast Woodstock to provide for a two-vehicle loading-unloading zone, which PDOT also supports. The other conditions of approval required limited hours of operation, landscaping maintenance, keeping logs of guests and events, a grievance process, neighbor and neighborhood notifications, and most importantly, limiting the number of guests and events that can occur on a daily, weekly, monthly, and yearly basis. Most of the amendments proposed for the Reed College Master Plan are campus projects, such as the addition of more student housing and other academically oriented amenities. The East Moreland Neighborhood Association voted to appeal the portion of the decision that grants conditional use approval of the Parker House as a college-related meeting and event venue. The majority of the campus lies within the multi-dwelling R2 zone. It is bisected with environmental zoning that follows Reed Canyon and Crystal Springs Creek. A portion of the campus to the east is zoned R5, and the northwest corner of the campus is zoned Neighborhood Commercial 2, directly south of the main campus near Southeast 28th and Woodstock is the Parker House, which is zoned R7 and has a comp plan map designation of R5. The main campus is divided by Crystal Springs Creek and Reed Canyon, which creates the north and south campuses. The north campus primarily consists of open green space with formal playing fields, newer dormitories, and associated parking lots. The south campus includes the main academic quadrangle, student housing, the library, call auditorium, and the west parking lots. The Parker House is across southeast Woodstock from the main campus, directly south of a former president's house, now known as Prexy, and is approximately 200 to 300 feet from the west parking lot. The college proposes to expand the approved master plan boundary to include additional properties that have been acquired since the last master plan update, plus identify areas of potential future expansion, which are identified by the blue boundary lines on this map. The college also identified various areas on campus as potential building sites for proposed projects that may be developed during the 10-year term of this master plan. The hearings officer approved these development projects. The college also proposes to expand the master plan boundary to include the Parker House, which was acquired in 2004 and renovated extensively. The college requests conditional use approval to change the use of the Parker House from residential to a college-related use, with the Parker House serving as a meetings venue. West from the main entry to the campus is the west parking lot. The Parker House is directly south of Prexy and is accessed from the west parking lots by a sidewalk that connects to southeast Woodstock and a grand stairway that takes a pedestrian from southeast Woodstock up to the formal lawns and to the Parker House. The college proposes to manage vehicle traffic and parking associated with Parker House use by requiring all visitors and guests to park on campus and arrive on foot to the Parker House. Most of the meetings and smaller events are anticipated to be attended by faculty, staff, and students who are already on campus and will simply walk from the main campus to the Parker House. Off-campus visitors will be directed to park in the west parking lot and walk over. At the corner of Southeast Woodstock and Southeast Moreland Lane, a large stairway takes the pedestrian up to the Parker House, the main lawns at the back of the building, which we see here. On-site pedestrian pathways allow guests to circulate around the house to a main patio area, which we see here, and then to the front door, which faces Southeast Moreland Lane. The Parker House faces Southeast Moreland Lane, which is an unusually narrow local service street. The parking and traffic management plan proposed by the college and reviewed by Portland Transportation includes a number of strategies to keep the Parker House traffic off of Moreland Lane, except for some deliveries, which will be received in a driveway. Conditions of approval in the hearings officer's decision includes additional measures to ensure that traffic impacts on Moreland Lane are minimal. As I mentioned before, due to the narrowness of Moreland Lane, the hearings officer found it appropriate to require the college to construct a 2 or 3 space loading zone along Southeast Woodstock next to the Parker House. The college's transportation consultant submitted commentary and this conceptual plan for the loading area along Southeast Woodstock for vehicles servicing the Parker House. This ensures that any valet parking, shuttle buses, or small deliveries will not occur on Southeast Moreland Lane. The hearings officer found that all of the proposed amendments and the request for the change of use of the Parker House meet all applicable approval criteria with conditions of approval. The crux of this application is, of course, a request for the Parker House, and it's that portion that the neighborhood has appealed. After publication of the hearings officer's decision, it was determined that the findings incorrectly attributed a quote in opposition to a citizen who, in fact, is supportive of the proposal. Hearings officer has requested that this error be corrected in the final decision by City Council. As mentioned earlier, the college submitted a number of revisions and clarifications to their proposal, which included significant reductions to the activities planned for the Parker House. Conditions of approval require parking and traffic management strategies to ensure that guests arrive on foot, or if accommodated by a valet parking or shuttle bus, those activities occur on Southeast Woodstock. The hearings officer placed conditions that limit the number of people. At first glance, these thresholds may appear somewhat confusing, but when applied as written, the various thresholds result in limits on activities that ensure that the intensity of the use is moderate. The examples of schedules that the college submitted into the record indicate that the college envisions...
How much more time do you need?
2 minutes.
Okay.
The schedules that the college have submitted into the record indicate that these thresholds are at the maximum of the amount of use they envision for the Parker House. The hearings officer also placed conditions that limit the hours of operation for the events so that the activities at the house will not be disruptive to the immediately surrounding residential neighbors. The Eastmoreland neighborhood appealed the decision and in their appeal statement listed a number of code citations that they feel were not met by the applicant. The first three that you see before you are all required components of a master plan, which must be submitted with the application. And I'd like to note that both the staff report and the hearings officer's decision found that these components were adequately addressed in the college's application. The Eastmoreland neighborhood also noted that multiple conditional use approval criteria were not met. Of the ones listed on the screen here, I would just like to note for you that the first citation, 815.010, is not an approval criterion, but rather the purpose statement for the conditional use chapter. The Eastmoreland neighborhood also feels that the conditions of approval imposed by the hearings officer are not adequate and do not provide mitigation for the significant impacts that will result from the conditional use of the Parker House. This slide and the next summarize the language of the approval criteria that the neighborhood feels have not been met. In general, the appeal statement expresses the broad themes that the conditions of approval are not enforceable and therefore do not provide any mitigation for the impacts anticipated from the use of the Parker House. And finally, the Neighborhood Association states that the traffic management and parking analysis failed to address safety issues, parking impacts, spillover parking in the neighborhood, and that overall the proposal and conditions of approval imposed by the hearings officer failed to meet the approval criteria. This concludes staff's presentation. I'm happy to answer any questions now or return after you hear testimony to provide clarifications or answer follow-up questions that the council may have.
We'll wait until it's the presentation's complete, then bring you back for questions.
All right.
The appellant, please step forward. You normally have 10 minutes because the city ran over 2.5 minutes. You get an additional 2.5 minutes as well.
I don't think I'll need it, but thank you.
Okay.
My name is Mike Fisher, for the record. I'm the vice president of the Eastmoreland Neighborhood Association. I am here today as the spokesperson for the Neighborhood Association. I know you have considerable demands on your time and resources, but I hope that you have been able to review the application and the decision of the hearings officer and are able to review our written submission before you make a decision. We are, of course, here to appeal the hearings officer's decision regarding the Reed College Master Plan, specifically the portion that details the use of the home at 2840 Southeast Woodstock Boulevard, now called the Parker House. Additionally, We expressed our concerns in the public hearing about the incompleteness and ambiguities and inconsistencies in the overall master plan, and we still have concerns about those. However, we lack the funds to retain professional traffic engineers, planners, and attorneys to continue to pursue our concerns about the increase in student enrollment and the fact that there are no limits placed on the overall population of the campus as the plan is now written. We have addressed this in detail in our written submission. Now on to the Parker House. We have opposed the non-residential use of this home since we first found out about the proposed change from residential to college-related use in April of 2005. We are still concerned. In fact, we are so concerned that when we called an emergency meeting of the board on September 16th to consider the hearings officer's decision, 11 out of 14 board members were able to attend. The vote to appeal was 10-0, with only our newest member abstaining. That should give you some indication of our level of concern with this issue. When I started preparing this argument, I was unsure where to start. Then it hit me like a ton of bricks. There are over 40 individual conditions attached by the hearings officer. A reasonable person might think that if the hearings officer has to attach over 40 conditions, there might be something fundamentally flawed with the plan to begin with. We are not going to argue that some use is not workable. Both hearings officer Simpson and hearings officer Frank stated in their decisions that with the proper level of use and controls, some use could be accommodated and allowed. Clearly, that sets precedence that the hearings officers believe that some use is acceptable. We accept and agree with that decision. The difference is that Mr. Frank, in his decision of August 3rd of 2006 denying use of the Parker House, decided that he would rather the college return with a new application for use of the Parker House than to impose his own conditions and restrictions. Mr. Simpson decided to take an option available to him and to approve this change of use by adding over 40 conditions. In fact, if you examine the staff reports for this application and for the previous application, even the city planning staff can't seem to come up with a firm conclusion. The planning staff recommended in 2006 that a plan allowing more use than the current plan be approved, but in 2008 recommended that the current plan be denied even though it called for less use. Then, when the college came in the morning of the hearing with a new plan, the city planners decided it was then okay. We believe that shows what a troublesome decision this is for everybody. So the question is now not whether or not the use will be granted. It is how much use will be granted and what protections will be given to the neighbors to ensure that the livability of this neighborhood is maintained at the level it is now and that the burden of compliance and monitoring be placed with the college and the city and not on the neighbors. In our written submission, we have addressed the areas of code we believe are not satisfied by this plan or the conditions. We indicated generally what these areas are in our appeal application, and I would ask that you read our written statement for details, details we haven't been given the time to address here. I would like to address one specific code area in this testimony. According to Code Section 33815105, the burden is on the college to prove that the use of this home would not significantly conflict with the appearance and function of residential areas. However, the use proposed does significantly conflict with the appearance and function of our residential area. 450 people per month, 5,400 people per year, use allowed every day, up to 3 individual events per day. If you use the numbers put in place by Mr. Simpson, you could conclude that in any given week, the home could be used on Saturday from 8 a.m. until 11 p.m. for an outdoor party of 75 people, then again on Sunday from 11 a.m. to 10 p.m. for another outdoor party of 75 people, then every day Monday through Friday the following week until 11 p.m. for evening events. Code Section 33815105A says that to comply, the overall residential appearance and function of the area will not be significantly lessened. How does a use of this size not significantly lessen the appearance and function of the area? The appearance and function of the area is a residential neighborhood and a place for people to make their homes, not a location for a quasi-convention center. This one failure to address code is, by itself, reason enough to reject this plan. Again, we have addressed other specific concerns about specific conditions in our written submission. But let's consider what might work, and what plan you could okay or course you could take to get this issue behind us and for all parties to move on. One of the more serious issues that have come to light in this whole process is the fact that the college falsified information on their building permit applications. The college stated on their permit applications, and the record has copies of the permits and subsequent emails between city staff, that the use of the Parker House would be for the residents of the president of the college. This fact has been ignored by the city staff and the hearings officer, yet has a significant importance on this whole proceeding. According to City Code 2410-070J, change of use must be approved before construction permits can be issued. Several officials at the college have stated several times to the Neighborhood Association that the home was never going to be the home of the president. Yet the college told the city several times the home was to be used as the residence of the president, and all building permits issued were for residential construction. So all the testimony about how wonderful a job the college did on the remodel should be disregarded, and the fact that they have poured a large sum of money into this house is, basically, an unfortunate action on the college's part. In fact, we should still be deciding whether or not this is an appropriate use, and no construction work should ever have been done on the Parker House, based on the fact that, indeed, a change of use was the intent. That is what the code says. And this is very relevant to what the appropriate use should be, something that approximates residential use, something that approximates the use as if the president of the college were to live there. Not 450 visitors per month, not 5,400 people per year, not daily use. The president of the college has always lived in the East Moreland neighborhood up until this point. He has used his home to entertain staff, faculty, visiting dignitaries, and the like, with very few disruptions to the neighbors or complaints from them. But not every single day, and not certainly to the magnitude that this plan requests. This historic type of use is the type of use we can endorse, and in fact have suggested and proposed. The hearings officer chose not to incorporate our suggestions into his plan. We believe that a use like this could be accommodated with vigorous enforcement by the college and the city of the conditions set by the hearings officer without disrupting the normal lifestyles of the residents of Moreland Lane and the East Moreland neighborhood. We believe that a use closely approximating residential use could meet code with just a few conditions. First, allow a use by the college of the Parker House that would approximate residential usage in the number and frequency of events and the number of attendees, using historical data from the previous president's homes as a baseline. Second, allow this use as a standalone conditional use and not include the house in the boundaries of the college nor in the master plan. Third, require an annual Type 3 hearing and review for continuation of the permit, where such information as the reports of the standing committee that the hearings officer established in his decision could be reviewed, as well as the testimony of neighbors and college officials, the review of any code compliance issues, and review of the Reed safety officer's logs. The standalone use and the reviews are the keys here. These two things provide the protection to the neighbors that the master plan and conditions do not, and put the burden of compliance where it belongs, on the college and the city. Once the home is included in the master plan and the college boundary, the neighborhood has no direction to take except the filing of code compliance complaint after complaint, and the home will never be removed from the master plan, no matter what the adverse impact it might have on the neighborhood. It is up to the college and the city to ensure compliance, not the residents of the neighborhood. This plan is how that can happen. Not some self-policing, hope everything goes good, unenforceable plan. The Neighborhood Association is willing to participate in mediation, arbitration, or any other facilitated negotiations that the council feels appropriate to determine a starting point of use for the Parker House. We hope you will agree with us that Reed's master plan and the hearings officer's decisions fail to meet the applicable codes and fails to provide sufficient protection to the neighbors of the Parker House, and that you will consider our proposal as a workable solution, or at least a starting point when you make your decision. Thank you for listening.
We'll now have persons who support the appeal. Could you read the first three names?
First three are Gretchen Sperling, Jim Wygant, and Mark Farron, I believe is the last name. That's please Gretchen come. Sperling, Jim Wygant, and Mark Farron.
Please come forward. Was there a third name, Jim? What was your name?
I'm Gretchen Sperling.
He's coming.
Okay.
And they'll be followed by Bert Sperling and Richard Pierce, rather.
I'm Gretchen Sperling. I'm the president of the Eastmoreland Neighborhood Association. But I'm really here more to speak to the issue of livability. Today we have an opportunity to continue the long tradition that Portland has established in working and sometimes fighting for maintaining the livability of the city. Portland enjoys a national reputation for having kept a viable downtown, but we were in danger of losing the very core of the downtown to a business that wanted to keep the property that is now known as Pioneer Courthouse Square as a parking lot. Committed citizens understood that once lost, the quality that made downtown special could not be regained with the same vigor. We have an opportunity to remember our mistakes as a city and learn from them. Urban renewal wiped out South Portland and a tight-knit Jewish community. Emmanuel Hospital expansion decimated an active, vibrant inner-city neighborhood. Both neighborhoods lost family-owned businesses and a sense of place that has yet to be recaptured. The application for remodeling Parker House by Reed was made with a stated intention that it was to be the president's house. This has become clearly untrue. Conference rooms and a commercial kitchen don't belong in a single-family dwelling in a neighborhood designated as single-family homes. We are here today to plead our case as stewards of the land and citizens of this remarkable city, which I appreciate Nick Fish making reference to Mr. Olmsted and his commitment. We have demonstrated that citizens individually and collectively can make a difference. Margaret Strong, Bud Clark, Connie McCready, and all of the other people who started simply to preserve their piece of the world found that in working together and obeying the regulations of the city, we could move into the future with an appreciation of our heritage and including all of its citizens in this community that we call Portland. Might doesn't make right. Once used as a convention center and an entertainment facility, the genie cannot be put back into the bottle. The bell cannot be unrung. Perception is everything. Does misstating intended use on a building permit go without consequence because the offending applicant has political clout and sums of money to defend an action that was wrong at the beginning? Does our liking the applicant color the decision and allow usage that clearly violates written code? Our neighborhood has taken on this because we have an obligation in partnership with the city to honor and uphold its laws. We ask that you find in favor of neighborhoods because this is really about preserving what gives Portland its national reputation, unique, livable neighborhoods that we each can call home. Thank you.
Go ahead.
Ms. Sperling, I want to follow up on the question of sort of language, because we're struggling with this notion of what is the president's house and what are its possible uses.
Yes.
Let me offer you an example. My wife teaches at PSU. We were once invited to President Bernstein's house. He invited a couple hundred people to come for some reception. My understanding is there were periods of time he did or did not live in the house, but it was considered the president's house, and it was, in his case, it was located near Lewis and Clark College. Is there, I just want to understand, I was following your testimony very, hopefully, carefully. Is it important, is it essential that a president actually occupy a president's house? And in addition, in light of the role that a president plays, doesn't the house often become used for ceremonial functions like fundraisers and alumni gatherings and the like in the matter of, as just a matter of course?
Yes. And I'm glad that you brought that up because it's not only the spirit and the intention of the use of space. So in terms of the amount of use that they have requested, it is out of bounds what that would be considered an appropriate use. And in the past, we have had presidents live in the neighborhood who've used their homes in the functions that you've described
holiday parties, fundraisers.
Exactly, and we are absolutely willing to support that because that's a level of use that is significantly in keeping with how a president would use a home. And the best of all worlds would be that the president would live in the home. And over the years of talking with Reed officials, I've encouraged that they look into that, that they offer that as a package when they invite someone to become president of the college, that it's actually a bonus to live within the neighborhood. And so it's a matter of degree.
And so if I may, just to follow up on that, what's the line? How can we draw that line? And what's the precedent you're asking us to? Because you could have a president, for example, that is committed to raising $1 billion and does a fundraiser for 250 people every day, and that I could see would have a certain impact. Or you could have someone who delegated that function and just lived as a hermit in their house. I mean, so how do we determine at what point you reach that tipping point that where it has an adverse impact on the neighborhood?
I think looking at the historic use of other presidents' homes as a precedent, as a guideline, and also to consider that the impact on that particular home in the Moreland Lane, where it's a very small, narrow lane, that it would have a deleterious effect on not only just the lane, but the neighborhood. And
thank you.
Thank you.
Next.
My name is Jim Weigant. I'm a former president of the East Moreland Neighborhood Association and a resident of the neighborhood for over 30 years. When Reed filed its master plan proposal in 2006, they stated that the student body will grow no larger. That's a quote from their proposal. The student cap at that time was 1,325. And they concluded, and this is again as another quote, the 15-year average student population of approximately 1,215 may be taken as a good indicator of future expectations. That was in 2006. 2 years later, this year, they asked that the student cap be raised by 45%. The college is expanding and has directed considerable effort to fundraising. Parker House is a part of that scheme, but Parker House is a residence located in a neighborhood that is almost entirely residential. In fact, there are only three businesses in the East Moreland neighborhood, not counting Parker House. Reed would like to argue that they have improved the property. They improved it by adding an elevator, multiple phone lines, and a commercial kitchen. They did that under false pretenses, as you already heard, having obtained a remodeling permit from the city under the misrepresentation that they were remodeling a residence. They now concede that they never intended for anyone to actually live in Parker House. The argument that the activities planned for Parker House are essentially the same as would occur at the president's home is belied by the fact that the president will not live there. Parker House should never have been accepted into the master plan, and Reed should never have been granted a conditional use permit. Reed presidents have lived in the East Moreland neighborhood over several decades, and one former president still lives there. Their homes were never part of any master plan, and they conducted themselves and their functions in the manner of anyone else living in a residential area. Over several decades, that arrangement worked fine, with virtually no conflict with the neighborhood. The conflict that exists now is largely of Reed's making. They did not disclose their plans for Parker House until it was impossible to conceal them any longer. They held a series of public hearings at which they repeatedly heard complaints about their plans for Parker House, but those plans emerged unchanged at the conclusion of those meetings. Reed has reversed the normal process, building first and asking for permission afterwards. I ask that you remove Parker House from Reed's master plan and compel Reed to conform to existing zoning regulations. Thank you.
My name is Mark Farron. I live at 2802 Southeast Moreland Lane, directly across from the Parker House. This proposed conditional use permit would be very bad for the neighborhood. It would destroy the livability. I think that should be clear to everybody. I'm just going to make 2 points here. Most of them have been made before. But first, Reed College violated the building code in making improvements to the Parker House without permits. They clearly consider themselves above the law, and yet the city now plans to reward them for their illegal behavior. The proposed conditional use permit has numerous conditions that must be satisfied by Reed, but clearly an entity inclined to violate city code will not hesitate to violate the conditions of the permit. We would be foolish to think that they would comply with those. If the city approves the permit, it is tantamount to condoning code violations. Second, Reed College and the hearings officer have proceeded with this permit request despite unanimous opposition from Moreland Lane residents. So the college has no respect for its neighbors, in addition to no respect for the city code. The city also would be demonstrating a lack of respect for its constituency if it approved this permit. How does the permit benefit the city in any way, I would ask? Can anybody answer that question? On the other hand, it would have a serious detrimental impact on our neighborhood. We live on a very quiet, peaceful street, and that would be destroyed. So I urge you to overturn this conditional use permit application. Thank you.
Thank you.
The last two signed up are Bert Sperling and Richard Pierce.
Please state your name when you speak. You each have 3 minutes.
Yes. My name is Richard Pierce. I live at 2916 Southeast Woodstock. I'm the next door neighbor to the Parker House. I live in the Pierce House. And the Pierce House has been there since 1999 when I bought it from Reed College. Prior to Reed buying the Parker House, it was the Lily Orne House for 40 years. And in point of fact, that house has been a residence since it was built in the 1920s. I believe you, in previous testimony, you've seen Moreland Lane. At least I hope you have. And I hope some of you have walked it because it's a very narrow, very irregular lane that could only be done by subdivision over time. The challenge I have with Reed is beyond what you've heard today in terms of less than a clear goal for the Parker House has been the fact that they're willing to basically throw that 11 residents that live adjacent to Moreland Lane, their considerations have not been adequately addressed in terms of the livability that's been established in that lane since the 1920s. It's a small very quiet little lane. It's part of the East Moreland neighborhood, but because we're completely cul-de-sac'd, it's a segregated part of East Moreland. My house is literally 25 feet from the front door of the Parker House property. I wanted to address Commissioner Fish's question about, you know, when does a resident stop being a resident? You know, I guess I would ask a spouse. And I would ask all of you commissioners and Commissioner Adams as to how many times you have 40 people a day from 8 a.m. till 10 p.m. over as visitors.
Don't ask.
You exceed that number? Okay. So I think it's pretty clear here that what we're talking about is the request for a fine institution like Reed. Remember, I bought my house from Reed. We've mentored three foreign exchange students from Reed. We even used their cafeteria when I was remodeling my house. So I am on a record in the Oregonian in 2004, 2005, supporting the Parker House because I thought it was going to be the president's residence. We have been involved, my wife and I, in a number of charitable events where we've had 75 to 100 people in our home for fundraising. We've also seen what happens when the Parker House was sold and they've had several estate sales where the lane becomes very clogged with traffic, and those pictures are in the original testimony. So I'm struggling with how we got to this point and the fact that I don't think the city has done an adequate job in protecting our concerns about the livability of our Little Lane. And I think I speak for the 11 residents of Moreland Lane in the sense that on a microcosm, we are a neighborhood within a neighborhood, and you have a house that's been used as a residence for, you know, since it was built, and now you're considering an institutional use permit that is slightly flawed, I think, in the process of how it got this far.
Mayor, may I ask a question? Sir, two questions. Are you within walking distance to the building on Reed that houses Chamber Music Northwest concerts in the summertime?
I am.
So, and I'm just curious, when there are concerts at I forget the name of that building, but the
Hall. Hall, yes.
When there are concerts there, my understanding is that a lot of people park in the west parking area. That's a place where,
yes,
if there's a space. Have you had any impact where you live of people that have caused congestion or parked on the street or,
yes,
create other when there are concerts?
Because I live on Woodstock and I'm right next door to the Parker House, there have been several occasions where in a very bicycle advocate county like Multnomah County, I've had people knock on my front door saying that my guests were parked in the lane. The Woodstock lane on the what would be the south side of Woodstock has a parking strip, and then it has a bike lane. And what happens is that the overflow parking from that parking lot, or sometimes not even the overflow, it's just some events at Reed, where they park along Woodstock and they block the bike lane. And I've had at least three incidences where bikers coming up to me and assuming those were my guests because they parked out in front of my house blocking that bike lane. So I have major concerns that because Reed does not have a parking permit system or an enforcement system of their own, that we're going to be left to trying to, you know, basically police the area.
My second question is, I'm in looking at the hearing officer's decision, I come up with 17 conditions. The Neighborhood Association.
If you count the bullet points, there are over 40.
Okay. All right. So 17 categories. I'm just curious, as because a big issue that you're raising and the Neighborhood Association is raising is that there are either insufficient conditions or there are conditions which don't mitigate the impact.
Yes.
So help us with that for a second. Are there any additional conditions which you think we ought to consider which would address any of the concerns you've raised today?
Yes, I think that the activity around the house at 40 people per day is not a residential-like use. I believe that will compromise the noise, lighting, egress to the system, to the Parker House. I mean, many people have walked to my door thinking that my house was the Parker House. I live next door. I've had people during the estate sale that happened prior to Reed occupying the house where they trespassed on my property, a good number of people.
So you would argue that we should limit the number of people who can visit today?
Yes.
Are there any other... And I realize you're not here as the attorney for the association, but I'm just curious, are there any other conditions which you would ask us to consider which would address some of the impact that you've identified?
Well, I think I get back to your original point, Commissioner Fish, and that is that what makes a residence a resident? It has to have a resident in it. I supported Reed as long as I understood that Colin Diver, their new president, was going to live there. If he and Mrs. Diver were living there, I would tell you that I think a spouse would have some control over the number of people that go in there from 8 o'clock on Monday to 10 o'clock on Saturday, including some Sundays. And that while the Reed College president has always demonstrated, at least in Eastmoreland when I've attended those events, a decent participation, it wouldn't be the 8-to-5 meeting schedule that they proposed.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
My name is Bert Sperling, and commissioners, mayor, mayor-elect, thank you for the opportunity to talk to you. Basically, my perspective is a unique one. I'm a resident of the neighborhood. I'm a member of the board, to disclose, of Eastmoreland Neighborhood Association, but I live far enough away this wouldn't realistically impact me at all. But I'm also a nationally recognized expert in livability, and I've brought, for instance, a couple of my best-selling books, Cities Ranked and Rated. Portland figured quite well in those. Best Places to Raise Your Family, another one, published by John Wiley. And I do work with Richard Florida's group and the contributed to his blog and also the Freakonomics blog in the New York Times. I am quite familiar with livability. And of course, Portland is great these days as far as livability. And mostly Portland is great because there have been some hard decisions that have been made. There have been hard decisions, for instance, to keep the downtown livable, to keep it vibrant, to resist the temptation to go with the Mount Hood Freeway. In my experience and my judgment doing these type of livability studies for 25 years now, what we have is this would erode the quality of life in the neighborhood. There have been other instances where universities have, and schools, institutions, though well-meaning and though certainly contributing to the welfare and the betterment of the community at large, are at the wrong place. For instance, we can look at Portland State University. Ms. Sperling brought up about how Portland State had taken away a complete community. And when we look at Eastmoreland as a neighborhood, let's not just look at a neighborhood, but in fact this little microcosm, this little small lane of Moreland Lane, Parker House is the wrong use for that lane. I think it would be certainly much more suitable in another place where it is a larger street that can handle things more. But Moreland Lane is a very small micro neighborhood in there that I think would be severely affected by this. So you're at a point right now where you can make a very tough decision. It's a tough decision, but it's a crucial one to stop this degradation there. Reed has the resources. They have the land where they can construct it. They have the Prexy House, which would be perfect for this type of venue. They have money. They have land. There are many alternatives available to Reed without the erosion of a little slice of Portland that could be lost forever. Thank you.
Thank you, folks. Is that it?
That's all signed up.
We're now going to hear from the principal opponent or the applicant for this. Please come forward. You have 15 minutes because the city went over 2.5 minutes. You can have a total of 17 and a half.
Good, thank you. For your record, my name is Steve Abel. I'm a lawyer with the Stoll Reeves office, and I represent Reed College this afternoon. With me are Hugh Porter, the Vice President of College Relations for Reed College, as well as Jennifer Bates, the Director of Public Affairs. And before I proceed into responding to the arguments this morning, I'd like Hugh to say a couple of words about this request.
Thank you. My name is Hugh Porter, Vice President at Reed College. Reed College's proposed use of the Parker House will enhance and support the college's educational mission. In particular, the house would strengthen our ability to present education as a continuous conversation between students, teachers, and other members and guests of the college community. From our perspective, the Parker House is unique in its size, its location, and its ability to accommodate college uses. It is located across the street from an on-campus parking lot and is well connected to campus via sidewalks and crosswalks. It offers a diverse collection of separate internal spaces that can hold small and medium-sized gatherings and the occasional larger reception after public lectures or board meetings. And it can welcome visiting lectures for overnight stays. We do regret that a majority of neighbors on the street near Parker House and some neighbors in Eastmoreland generally have found our...
Excuse me, sir. One person at a time. We've listened to your side. Please proceed.
Thank you. And some neighbors in Eastmoreland generally have found our plans alarming. Other neighborhood residents support our use, were pleased by the restoration of a neighborhood landmark, and hope that neighborhood groups could use the Parker House to advantage. Many, many efforts and informal discussions with opponents in the neighborhood to address concerns and to reach consensus have not proved fruitful. Several meetings with professional mediators from the city's Office of Neighborhood Involvement also did not produce agreement on the college's proposed use. Altogether, have been more than 80 meetings over the past 3 years. Disappointingly, throughout all these meetings, we did not really progress beyond fundamental disagreement over the college's request to use the Parker House for anything except a single-family residence. These discussions and guidance from city staff, however, were useful in informing the conditional use guidelines written and revised and that would address reasonable concerns. The final plan approved by the city's hearings officer contains important compromises of the type, size, frequency of activities, and a robust set of guidelines for the college's operation of the Parker House. So in closing, I simply want to reiterate the described use of the Parker House is important to the college and would strengthen our ability to do our educational work. Thank you.
Thanks, Hugh. And Hugh would be available for questions, too, when I conclude. As Hugh indicated, there have been substantial numbers, and I think the number of meetings that occurred was something like 80, with neighborhood representatives to try to resolve issues with respect to this particular application, all of which went for naught. And in our application materials we submitted to the city, we listed those meetings so you could have a sense of when those meetings occurred and the folks that were invited to those meetings. There is division on this particular issue, as you can tell. But as Hugh said, those meetings led Reed College over the space of 2006 into 2007 and into now this year to understand what some of the issues are with respect to the Parker House and respond to those issues in its application that was submitted. Now, today you've heard some allegations about the Parker House and its application, and I just want to respond to some of those. And one of them I didn't expect would come up again, but let me just speak to it quickly, and that is this question of student count. As you know, the Reed College application is about the entire master plan, and just to take you back a little in history, that master plan's been in place since 1990 at this campus. And so when there are these numbers thrown around about numbers of conditions, many of those conditions are carrying forward from the master plan that has been in place for Reed College since as early as 1990, some almost 30 years ago. But at any rate, if you look at the prior master plan, there is confusion about how to count students. Do you count students as full paying equivalent? Do you count them as headcount? And I think there's a couple of other terms that are within that particular document. And unfortunately, Reed received a complaint through the city's Bureau of Development Services that its student count, however calculated, was too high by a few students. And that led Reed to say, well, let's get our apples and oranges into one place and let's decide what the right student count is and how to calculate that so there's no confusion when a complaint like that comes in. And ultimately, the master plan that you have before you concludes that headcount is the appropriate basis of calculating student count, and then we have a number. And we support that number with the transportation work that was done by Kittleson Associates to make a determination about capacity that's available in the transportation system and capacity that's available for parking. That's how student count folds into this and is a part of the master plan. We think we've done everything, and the hearings officer agreed to respond to the issue of student count and make that clear for all and also demonstrate that there's adequate capacity on the campus for those students and the remainder of the faculty and staff. The second thing that I heard today, and it's actually one of the most disturbing parts of this application to me, is this ongoing question about what representations were or weren't made by Reed College about what this house would be used for. And I'm going to suggest to you that you not take those into consideration and instead look at really what's going on here, which is that you must look at the land use code for purposes of what goes on in this particular residence. Now, what the allegations are, and we don't agree at all about the what the record shows. Is there allegations that the house is going to be, in some instances, be used as a president's house, in some instances not going to be used as a president's house, and there's a confusing record. And what happens is you get contractors who submit permits to the city. They use abbreviations. They don't, in fact, know what they're doing, and they may submit all kinds of things. But there is no record of any particular position on that. Now, all of that's irrelevant because the reality is what you are analyzing, and this goes to Commissioner Fish's question, is what's the litmus test, what's the touchstone for purposes of making a determination? And that is what you're looking at is the criteria that exists for purposes of, in this particular circumstance, institutional uses.